So as Rob mentioned, we are in the time of Advent. We had a fun-filled afternoon with the kids telling the Christmas story, and then the ability to build some Christmas crafts together and share some cookies, and it's been a really enjoyable day and a day of joy, and that's what today is. We light the pink candle to have an expression of joy in this time of waiting, this time of longing, this anticipation bursts forth into joy even before the arrival of Christ in the season of Advent, the season of waiting. And Advent traditionally was more of a time of lamenting and then a burst forth of joy on the third Sunday. And so we don't lament during the Advent season the way that we lament in the lead up to Easter, but it's still a time of anticipation, the time of remembering that there is darkness, but also remembering that there is light that breaks forth into the darkness and gives hope, gives joy, gives purpose because of that. And so today we're going to talk about joy, and we're going to be joyful and excited about the light that breaks forth into the darkness. And we're going to read Isaiah 9 through this Advent. We're going to work through Isaiah and talk about light throughout the sermon series, and Isaiah is going to be our background. When I lived in Germany, I taught English as a second language there with Berlitz, and they, during my training, they always said, all right, when you have somebody read a passage, or if the reading assignment is part of the lesson, don't just tell people to read. Give them a purpose for reading. Tell them something to look for, key words, expressions, how to pronounce something. I don't do this during the scripture reading, but today I'd like to give you a little bit of a task. I'd like you to look at the time frame of the verbs. Is it past tense, present tense, or future tense? And just as you go through. If you don't want to, it's fine. You can just listen to the scriptures. But I will make a point about it later. So Isaiah 9, we're going to read verses 2-7, and the emphasis will be on verses 2 and 3, and that's on page 1032 in our pew Bibles. Good. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. You will enlarge the nation of Israel, and its people will rejoice. They will rejoice before you as people rejoice the harvest, and like warriors dividing the plunder. For you will break the yoke of their slavery and lift the heavy burden from their shoulders. You will break the oppressor's rod, just as you did when you destroyed the army of Midian. The boots of the warrior and the uniforms bloodstained by war will all be burned. They will be fuel for the fire. For a child is born to us, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and peace will never end, and he will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen. Just a little bit of background as we bridge from last week's message to this week. We have Isaiah 5 is a song of the vineyard, and this is an indictment against the people's rebellion against God. And then this moves to Isaiah's call in Isaiah 6, where he sees the divine counsel, he sees God, and his lips are cleansed for the prophetic task that he's about to embark on. But he's told that the people won't listen to the words that he speaks. And we have Isaiah 7 to 9, and this is where we find ourselves this week. And the background of Isaiah 7 to 9 is what's called the Syro-Ephraimite War. And that's where Syria or Damascus, as is mentioned in the Northern Kingdom, unite themselves to revolt against Assyria. And Assyria is the world power at the time, and these nations were paying tribute to Assyria to stay at peace and not have to fight the Assyrians. And they invite the Southern Kingdom into this, King Ahaz. And this is where Isaiah's voice comes in. And the Southern Kingdom doesn't join in this rebellion, but they're trusting in Assyria as opposed to God's protection. And that's what Isaiah's message to Ahaz is. Trust in the Lord, trust in his protection and his power, and not in anyone else. So this section kind of binds to the end of Isaiah of Jerusalem, which is in chapters 36 to 39, and these are the historical narratives which bring Isaiah to life and is the boundary markers of his prophetic ministry in a historical period, dealing with Ahaz and Hezekiah, and in these times of darkness and uncertainty as kingdoms are coming against Judah and Jerusalem, and they're told to trust in the Lord. There will indeed be light, and there will be protection if they choose to trust in Yahweh, their God, their Lord. So this is a period of uncertainty, a period of coming darkness as there's turmoil, there's anxiety. And Isaiah instructs the people that they will see a great light, or they have seen a great light. So you might be wondering why I asked you to look for the verbs in this passage. And part of translation, and the fun part of translation, is not just knowing what words mean, but also what time frame to understand the words and to understand, is it past, is it present, the future. And when you're going from two different languages that have different ways of expressing time frame in language, then that's always a challenge figuring that out. And so there, in this passage here, there's a little bit of possibility to translate in different ways. And if you've been picking up the bulletin and read the front, you will see that the New Living Translation has this passage in the future. You will see a great light. A light will shine in the darkness. And so it's this future perspective, this looking forward to a future time of seeing light. Many of the other translations, though, in the NIV, as an example, have it as a past reference. For example, the NIV here has, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned." And this is a backward perspective, a looking into a previous seeing of light that has implications and time frame for the future, for the present, but it's a backward perspective. And so which one is correct? Well, I'll spare you the research and the jumping into Hebrew too much, except for the pattern here is what we would call an eschatal pattern, which is generally past time reference, where things are looked to in the past. But there's this category that's called the prophetic perfect, and this is not really a grammatical category, but a rhetorical category. Things are so secure about what is being announced for the future that they are told as if they're completed. So if you think about in the English language, sometimes this comes up in when somebody wants to highlight just how trustworthy they are in completing a task. You might say, "Yeah, can I order, you know, so and so many pizzas," as we did earlier tonight, and somebody answered, "It's done." And you're like, "Well, I don't know if it's done yet. Like, I told you the order, you haven't finished it yet," but they want to let you know that they are a trustworthy person and it is for all intents and purposes done. It's finished. So this is kind of like the prophetic perfect, where things are future look, but they are completed, they're secure, because God has announced them through his prophet. So not telling you about how I would translate this passage, and this isn't a comment about my understanding of Hebrew verbs. I want to use this as an analogy for the message. So if you don't get that, it's okay. I want to use this as an analogy for a both and, as we look both to the past appearance of light and also the future hope of appearance for light, kind of this analogy of how to translate the passage in different contexts. So this is a light that will shine in the darkness, a light that has already shone or shined into the darkness. And so what type of light are we talking about? What type of light has appeared? And in Isaiah 9, it talks about being a great light, one that shines over the people, one that shines out of the darkness. The New Living Translation, the Bible in the pews, has a little reference to the Greek text about death casting a shadow. This expression of deep darkness that's in verse 2 is Salmevat in Hebrew. And this is the same shadow of death that's used in that famous Psalm 23, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. This is the same word that is used here to highlight the deep darkness that the people are presently walking in, presently experience. This is that heavy, deep darkness that just feels like death. That's how dark it is. It's used 18 times in the Old Testament, used 10 times in Job. So if you can kind of see how this is a heavy, weighty darkness that people are experiencing. But out of this comes a light that breaks forth into this darkness and shines for the people, shines over the people. And this is going to cause great joy. It causes great joy for the people. So what type of joy is this? And this is highlighted in Isaiah 9:3. There's lots of words for joy. It's one word for joy that is used three times in quick succession. It's to rejoice, to be glad. It's used, three forms of it are used in this very short verse. And it's just piling on this expression of great joy. And you're supposed to feel that exuberant energy that it's going to bring about for the people. And there's one other word that's a synonym for joy that's used in this passage. And four words for joy in short succession just highlight how great this expression of light is going to be for the people. This light will provide exuberant joy as when people are joyful about a good harvest, about a successful victory, two of the main components in the ancient life, good harvest and security and protection and being a powerful people. So this is highlighting that this light will cause the people to experience a wonderful, great expression of joy in this time of darkness. However, sometimes as quickly as the light shines into the darkness, it seems to disappear. It seems to go away, and you're left kind of back into this period of darkness where you're wondering, was that light even there? Where is it? What's going on? And it doesn't mean that the expression of joy and the celebration, the excitement wasn't true and wasn't real, and it doesn't have implications for future hope that you can once again look towards. But sometimes that light seems to disappear and move away. Joy can be the same thing. You can express joy, you can have joy, you can feel it, but sometimes it just seems to fall apart and move. So I'm using this idea of both past and future. This joy can be experienced as based on a past event, but also provide a future hope. And so Isaiah 7-9 is the section of numerous references to children being born. We have the Emmanuel sign, we have Mehershala Hasbaz, the longest name in the Hebrew Bible, that Isaiah lovingly bestows on his child. And then you have the child of light that is referenced here in this passage. And so this actually is a fitting analogy to this past joy that moves forward into a future joy. The time when you find out you are pregnant, there's a great moment of joy in that finding out that you are about to have a child. But then there's a long waiting period that goes from that announcement to the time that the child actually arrives. And in the middle, and definitely very close to the end of that, there it might seem like anguish or be a period of intense anguish. But as that process goes, you have that past experience of joy, and you have a future longing that moves you towards joy. And it's a fitting image when we're talking about Emmanuel, the breaking forth and birth of Jesus. Another image that I was thinking about, and kids, this is for you. When you get a parcel from your grandparents in the mail, which we happen to have happen this week, it's still in my office. I haven't brought it home yet from my parents. And it's filled with gifts that are going to bring joy to the children. I haven't brought them home and put them under the tree yet because I don't trust a 2.5-year-old and a 4-year-old not to, you know, open them and play with them already. But when we bring that box home, when we take out the presents, there's going to be joy in that moment. There's going to be anticipation and longing and much anguish in the few hours that they have to wait. But then there's going to be joy as they unwrap and they have that present. And even with that, there's the unwrapping of the present, but you don't necessarily open up the present and start playing with it and start, you know, building what things are. And I know what Noah's present is, and I'm already excited. So, anyway. I think these stories highlight that point of that longing for joy, and then that the past joy, and then the future joy, and that anticipation that moves in the middle of that, but sometimes with a sense of longing. The text of Isaiah is similar. There's longing, expectation of a new king, one who would rule with justice, one who would restore peace, who would restore order, safety, security, and justice for the nation of Israel. And there's this hope, and it's they long for it to take place, and they long to see it happen. And there were some good kings, but as with many circumstances in the Old Testament, that hope, that longing of that joy that they first had turned into disappointment, turned into long seasons of disappointment until the true king in Jesus was revealed. This joy, and we find in Isaiah 7 to 9 and Isaiah 9, it moves to this future anticipation where once and for all joy would break into the darkness and there would be great light. It looks past, beyond their circumstance, their situation, their disappointment, into a time of fulfilled hope, a time of fulfilled joy in the coming of the Messiah. So this joy is the same in the announcement of the birth of Christ. It's a birth bursting forth of excitement, but there's still a time of waiting. It's a time of longing for that future joy. The story of Jesus and the joy of the defeated gloom of death. And we live in this middle point. We live in the middle point between God's arrival in the world in the birth of Jesus and in his death and resurrection. We live looking forward to that end where the consummation of all things, where things are restored and things are set to rights, and then there is true fulfillment and true joy at that end period. And we live in this tension. And part of the Advent cycle, this Advent season, is to experience a little bit of that waiting, but also to experience that moment of joy that propels us forward in our daily tasks and our daily working out what it means to follow after Jesus. One of my favorite quotes, and I quoted this a couple years ago, and Brendan used it in his email a couple weeks ago that he sent out to the Emmanuel community, and it's from Bernard of Clairvaux, and he's a medieval monk, and he talks about these three comings of Jesus, and I think it fits with this understanding of joy in between points. So I'm going to read it here. We know that there are three comings of the Lord. The third lies between the other two. It is invisible, while the other two are visible. In the first coming, he was seen on earth dwelling among men. He himself testifies that they saw him and hated him. In the final coming, all flesh will see the salvation of our God, and they will look on him whom they pierced. The immediate coming is a hidden one. In it, only the elect see the Lord within their own selves, and they are saved. In his first coming, our Lord came in our flesh and in our weakness. In this middle coming, he comes in the spirit and in power. And in the final coming, he will be seen in glory and majesty. So these three comings are these three moments of joy that can be experienced in our Christian journey, based out of his Emmanuel, the coming of the Lord into our world, and based on the future hope of when God sets everything to rights. We live in that middle period where we're finding joy. We're finding joy in the longing, remembering backwards, but also looking forwards. So we're in this now moment of joy, which often seems elusive, but they're moments that remind us. They remind us of what has happened and what will happen. And so we live there. We live there longing, hoping, striving, but always remembering the joy that Christ brings into the world and will bring to this world, and has brought into this world. The joy of the past and the joy of the future meet us in our times of darkness, and they provide light in those situations and circumstances. And because of this, we, as we walk in darkness, we have seen a great light. And as we live in the land of death's shadow, a light has shined over us. But at the same time, when we walk in darkness, we will see a great light. And when we live in the land of death's shadow, a light will shine over us. Both things are true in our Christian journey. Both things are true in our now joy. And this can be tough. There's so much around us that creates fear, uneasiness, frustration, sadness, disappointment, and stress. All these things are the darkness. But we have the light of Christ that shines into the darkness, and the darkness does not and will not overcome it. And it's in that hope, and it's in that light, that future hope, that future hype, light that brings us joy in these dark places. So we live in this now joy, and we do things that allow us to live in this reality, to live in the reality of the light of Christ. We do things that remind us of what he has done for us and also what he will do for us to find this now joy, to find the peace and comfort that only the Lord can bring. One of the things that we do each week to remind us of this now joy, this now moment that bridges between the past and the future, it's the table, and that's where we meet both ends of things. We meet what Christ has done and what Christ will do in these elements that we have here tonight. We do this to remind us that there is joy along the way, and we celebrate his death until he comes and sets everything to rights. So as we get up and as we walk forward, claim this moment of joy, even if you feel like darkness is all around at the moment. Be joyful, be celebratory for this moment, and allow it to carry you forward, moving into the light that he shines in the darkness, into the moment of all things being made new, and live in that reality, in that hope, the anticipation, and in that joy.